Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. David French of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives. And just to show you the true professionals we are today, David is here even though his beloved Memphis Grizzlies were knocked out of the NBA playoffs last night despite a game effort in Game 6 against the San Antonio Spurs. And I am here despite the Chicago Bears making one of the stupidest draft day trades ever, pretty much mortgaging the franchise for a guy that easily would have been there for the next pick. And oh, by the way, probably won't be that good anyway. So we should also tell you today that while the Bears make terrible decisions, you should not make a terrible decision. Go ahead and go to simplysafe.com/ricochet. That is a good way to get 10% off your home security system. And David, it's great to be with you again.
Well, thanks so much for having me back. I appreciate it.
Well, let's start with the good martini. And this is a pair of executive orders. President Trump, pretty active with the executive orders. But these two should make conservatives pretty pleased. The one that he just signed deals with offshore drilling. This is from The Hill. President Trump will sign, and now has signed, an executive order on Friday to reconsider several major Obama-era actions cracking down on offshore drilling. The aim of the order, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke told reporters Thursday, is to consider how to best expand offshore drilling in U.S. waters. The Trump administration is reversing President Obama's December decision to remove most of the Arctic Ocean from the federal drilling program. That move would have blocked drilling in the Arctic for years to come, angering the drilling industry, which has long desired to tap massive stores of oil underneath Arctic waters. Zinke said his department will also reopen the Obama administration's five-year drilling plan, finalized in November, that restricts lease sales for new drilling to only the Gulf of Mexico and waters off South Central Alaska. On the other side of things, this actually happened a little bit earlier in the week. President Trump signed an executive order Wednesday calling into question the future of more than two dozen national monuments proclaimed by the last three presidents to set aside millions of acres from development. In asking Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke for an unprecedented review of national monuments, Trump may force a question never before tested in the 111-year history of the Antiquities Act, whether one president can nullify a previous president's proclamation establishing a national monument. In signing the executive order at the Department of the Interior Wednesday, Trump called President Barack Obama's creation of national monuments an egregious abuse of power. And so, David, both of these are going to be probably challenged pretty aggressively by the environmental groups on the left. But this is a good pushback to the Greens basically taking over a policy when it comes to the Interior Department, certainly the last 8 years and possibly longer than that. When it comes to exploration for domestic energy, it's a big deal. And the fact that the federal government keeps aggressively gobbling up land and preventing economic development in areas that are not exactly the Grand Canyon out there.
Right. I mean, it's a direct rebuke to the notion that any environmental regulation is a good regulation. And that seems to have been the Obama administration's default position. I mean, regarding the national monuments, those of us who live east of the Mississippi don't really grasp the significance of federal land use policy. It just seems really distant and far away. But if you live west of the Mississippi, vast sections of the landscape are owned by the federal government. And some of them are increasingly walled off really from any what I would call productive use other than just to kind of sit there. And so, you know, this is an issue that really goes to the notion of how can we best develop and utilize our incredible natural resources? How can we responsibly utilize them? And what, you know, generations of presidents have done is they've kind of tried to wall off more and more of this country from productive use. And it's good to reexamine it. I'm not going to say that any given national monument designation was right or wrong. It's just good to go back and reexamine. This isn't necessarily a one-way ratchet. And then when it comes to the offshore drilling, you know, this is a lot of this is just steeped in climate change ideology and climate change, almost, you know, sort of the religious aspects of climate change ideology that are trying to limit fossil fuel development, fossil fuel exploration, fossil fuel exploitation in any way possible to try to force America off of reliance of fossil fuels. When, frankly, the alternatives just aren't ready yet. They're just not ready. In that circumstance, I far prefer energy independence. I far prefer a more vigorous energy sector here in the United States. And again, this is a good example of Trump saying, no, I'm not going to just assume that what the Obama administration did was correct. There doesn't necessarily need to be a one-way ratchet on environmental regulations. But as you said, this will all be challenged.
Absolutely. It's going to be in court. And even if it does go forward, as we mentioned, a lot of these take a few years to actually get to the point where policy could literally change and oil exploration, gas exploration, that sort of thing could take place. So moving in the right direction, though. So that's a good martini. Let's move to the bad martini now. And David, stop me if you've heard this one before. We might not get to a vote on the American Health Care Act because there aren't enough yes votes to get it passed. We obviously went through that a few weeks ago with the first to go around. Most of the House Freedom Caucus had issues with that. They wanted the full repeal. They didn't get the full repeal. They demanded at least some carve outs for states to be able to establish what an insurance policy was, essential health benefits and that sort of thing. And so they got that now in the new MacArthur Amendment, which Ian and I talked about yesterday. And now the moderates are balking at that. There's already 21 no's. And if you remember the whip count from last time, they can't have 22 or else there's going to be big trouble here. Right now, members of Congress voting no include Patrick Meehan of Pennsylvania, Costello of Pennsylvania, Comstock of Virginia, Butler of Washington, Katko of New York. And Republicans like Kinzinger of Illinois and Kaufman of Colorado are on the fence, but leaning no. So there's not going to be a vote this week. Some believe that might have been in response to Nancy Pelosi saying no vote this week or we shut down the government. But now it's looking more and more like it's because Republicans once again don't have the vote. So, David, I don't know if there's a way to balance this seesaw between the moderates and the conservatives here, but right now it looks like this major priority is going to have a very hard time getting done. And a lot of folks think a lot of the other priorities that are supposed to domino after this are going to be in limbo, too.
Yeah, I think there is a case for pessimism. I just tweeted out earlier today upon seeing the news that once again, this isn't going to the floor. What happens first? Obamacare repeal or replace, tax reform, the wall gets built, or hell freezes over. And right now, in my unscientific 855 vote poll, 63% are saying hell will freeze over. So, the problem that you have is you have here a Republican caucus that isn't exactly unified. With a relatively narrow margin in the House, the lack of unity means you're not even going to get out of the House. And we haven't even talked about the Senate. There isn't really a sense that the Senate, the Republican caucus in the Senate, is entirely unified. And while some things can be done with reconciliation, fundamental reforms, may require a filibuster-proof majority. It's so much easier to promise repeal, replace. It's so much easier to promise tax reform or even the wall than it is to deliver on these things. And I wonder what will happen. I wonder what will happen if after years of promises on Obamacare, that the Republican will fails on this. But here's the strange thing. Over time, actually, in recent months, it looks like Republican support for key elements of Obamacare has actually been increasing. But you know what? This is what entitlement programs do. They create winners, even if overall the country is a loser. And so at the end of the day, the desire that there is less of a political will to yank away from the winners the benefits that they have, when the benefits to the entire nation of unraveling a bloated, expensive, inefficient entitlement system are not readily apparent. But the losers are readily apparent. And that's one of the reasons why so far entitlements have been I used the term before on environmental regulations, but in this instance, entitlements have often been a one-way ratchet also. I don't think that we have repealed a major entitlement program. Why? Because in major entitlement programs create a whole class of winners that don't want to lose with entitlement reform or entitlement rollback.
David, obviously the people we should be most concerned about here are the families who are suffering from higher premiums, much higher deductibles, higher copays, and just having the healthcare system crush them in a number of ways, particularly if they're on an individual plan, much less getting in through their employer. So they're far more important than the fate of the politicians here. But if after 7 going on 8 years of promising repeal and replace, and we get to next year and nothing has been accomplished, wow, how deep is the bloodbath going to be?
Yeah, that's going to be a great question. I mean, think of the hundreds of millions of dollars that have been raised for repeal replace. Think of the tens of thousands of fierce promises made about repeal replace. I mean, if there is no repeal replace, you're going to have to ask yourself, do politicians ever do what they say? You know, you heard, well, we can't begin to stop Obama unless you get the House. Then the Republicans got the House. We can't begin to stop Obama really unless we get the House and the Senate. You get the House and the Senate. And make no mistake, Congress did a lot to stop Obama when Republicans were in Congress. But then they said, well, you know, you can't repeal Obamacare unless you have the House and the Senate and the presidency. And Republicans have the House and the Senate and the presidency. And now Obamacare repeal is looking iffy. That's stunning. Now, if the argument then becomes, well, we need a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate and maintain the majority in the House and keep the presidency, I'm not quite sure anyone's going to believe them at that point. So, yes, I mean, I think this is a seminal moment, not just for the health of our healthcare system. It's a seminal moment for the health of our body politic, for the very notion that can you trust what politicians say? In a similar way, I think with Trump himself, the wall is an issue like that. I mean, this is his most famous campaign promise, and he just very willingly and quickly kicked the can down the road on that particular promise. So it's way premature to say that Obamacare repeal is dead or the wall is dead, but the signs are not good, and I think that that is very ominous.
And they need urgency, because even if you do get this done, the later it gets done close to the 2018 elections, no one's going to see the benefits of that, or very few will see
right.
The benefits of it. So, wow, 7 years to work this out. But anyway, let's see if they do still make some progress down the line. So you might not be able to count on your politician to come through for you, David, but if you want to keep your home safe, you can count on Simply Safe Home Security. When you order your Simply Safe Home Security system online, you are taking the first easy step to protecting your home and family. It's got entry sensors, motion sensors, and glass break sensors. Soon you'll make your home a burglar's worst nightmare, and you'll have it all done in under an hour.
Simply Safe comes pre-programmed to work out of the box. Just plug in the base station and it'll talk you through the whole process. Seriously, even someone who isn't the slightest bit handy can install it. The entire system is wireless, so there's no need to drill holes in your walls or do other permanent damage. And once you're all set up, Simply Safe makes it just as easy to stay protected month to month. There are no long-term contracts, no hidden fees, and it's just $14.99 a month for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, professional monitoring and emergency dispatch service.
So don't wait another day to take your home safety into your own hands. Get Simply Safe. Go to simplysafe.com/ricochet right now to get 10% off your home security system. That's spelled SimpliSafe.com. Go now, simplysafe.com/ricochet. And David, we should probably point out that the Crazy Martini this week ought to be sponsored by the state of California. Between the Ann Coulter / Berkeley situation, and then yesterday Ian and I talked about how the state of California, at least the Democrats, are trying to push legislation that would bar companies from getting future state contracts if they work on a border wall, which, as you point out, seems less and less likely to happen anyway. Now we've got this gem brought to us by Ed Morrissey over at Hot Air, but he quotes quite liberally from the Sacramento Bee. Here's what the Bee says. More than 7 years after a Dignity Health hospital refused a hysterectomy to a Sacramento area transgender patient, the American Civil Liberties Union filed a lawsuit Wednesday on his behalf. The lawsuit filed in San Francisco Superior Court alleges that Dignity discriminated against Evan Michael Minton, 35, a former state capital legislative aide, when he sought a hysterectomy as part of his transition from male to female. Last summer, Mercy San Juan Medical Center in Carmichael, part of the Dignity Health chain, abruptly canceled Minton's surgery the day before it was scheduled to take place. His doctor eventually performed the procedure at another Sacramento area hospital, but the initial denial still causes frustration and disappointment, Minton said. After months of reflection, he decided to take legal action against the San Francisco-based hospital chain. Quote, it devastated me, and I don't want it to affect my transgender brothers and sisters the way it affected me. Now to Ed Morrissey. The plaintiffs allege, David, as a lawyer, you'll love this. The plaintiffs allege that the hospital and its network violated the state's UNRUH Civil Rights Act, which bars discrimination based on several criteria, including their sex, race, color, religion, ancestry, national origin, disability, medical condition, genetic information, marital status, or sexual orientation. Later in the code, the law further states that all of these include, quote, a perception by the person that having any of the characteristics of certain protected classes within these criteria. So what is happening to our law and what is happening to sanity right now?
Well, yeah, let's deal with the sanity first. I mean, let's talk about this persistent use of the term he in that story. Dudes don't get hysterectomies. Let's just say that straight out of the gate. This is symptomatic of something that's happening in California and blue states more broadly. And I wrote about this actually yesterday in NRO, and I called it California is seceding from the Constitution. That in essence, what California is doing is it's saying, and it has passed a number of laws, it's considering a number of laws, that there's this sort of social justice super clause that California is imposing upon every citizen or entity in the state. And the ACLU is appealing to this law called the UNRUH Act, which is extraordinarily broad with minimal religious liberty protections. And they're actually going to try to enforce, conscript Catholic hospitals into this really, radical development in the sexual revolution, this notion that you can, that a girl can become a boy. And so, you know, on the one level, you look at it and you say, well, this is just social justice warrior craziness. But on a deeper level, what this is a deeply important and consequential attack on religious liberty. And the ACLU is supposed to be and has supposed to have been a defender of civil liberties, a defender of religious liberty. And in this case, it's launching a direct assault on religious liberty, a direct assault on the First Amendment. And it's, and you know, the crazy part about it is that you cannot look at California courts with any confidence at all that they will respect the basic rights of conscience and the basic religious liberty rights of a Catholic hospital. That's what's crazy, that this sexual revolution ideology has so wormed its way into the California leadership and the progressive leadership of California in the legislation, in the governor's mansion, in the legislature, towards the governor's mansion, the judiciary, that I really fear for the prospects of this hospital in court. Now, we'll see what happens. It's going to have to be litigated, but I don't think anyone should feel confident that this hospital is going to win. And, you know, that will leave it with recourse up to the Supreme Court of the United States. And, you know, there's no guarantee that the Supreme Court will take the case. They don't take every case that gets to it.
Wow. There's been a lot of chatter about this week on social media about this issue. Bill Nye, as a lot of folks know, has definitely been pushing the envelope on this, which led to a discovery in recent days, David, of this gem from Bill Nye's very own program back in the 90s. Apparently he was a bigot then. Listen here.
Inside each of our cells are these things called chromosomes, and they control whether we become a boy or a girl. Your mom has two X chromosomes in all of her cells, and your dad has one X and one Y chromosome in each of his cells. Before you're born, your mom gives you one of her chromosomes and your dad gives you one of his. Mom always gives you an X. And if dad gives you an X too, then you become a girl. But if he gives you his Y, then you become a boy. See, there are only two possibilities. XX, a girl, or XY, a boy.
Jeez, they were such Neanderthals back then, David.
You know, I'm actually a little bit disappointed in you that you would play such bigotry. I actually had to take off my headphones for a while. It was just intolerable to listen to that. I think you should know that science has evolved. And that is a completely outdated thinking, just as Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton were completely outdated in their thinking about same-sex marriage, what, you know, 3-4 years ago. Now, I mean, that's a great illustration of the way in which this isn't science driving the agenda as much as the progressive left likes to say that it's science. It's activism. Because if you actually go back and you look at how is it that the medical profession or the psychiatric profession or these other professions changed their views on gender and sex, it wasn't scientific inquiry. It was political activism. And so political pressures brought to bear on scientific organizations. The scientific organizations caved to political pressure. And then now those who brought the political pressure go, look, it's science. No, they're just very good at bullying. They're just very good at socially at ostracizing and excluding and labeling people bigots so that human beings who are scientists who don't want to be on the quote unquote wrong side of history begin to change long held views without any new understanding. It's not like we've learned that the XX and XY chromosomes work any differently. There's been political pressure brought to bear. And so then they cloak that activism and this revolutionary ideology behind science when it was it's the tail wagging the dog. It's the activism defining the science, not the science defining the activism.
David, well stated. Thank you as always for filling in, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks so much.
David French of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Jim will be back on Monday. Please join us then for the next 3 Martini Lunch. In the meantime, head to simplysafe.com/ricochet to check out all they have to offer and get 10% off your home security system. Have a great weekend, everyone.